This is Improvised Radio Theatre with Dice, with me, Michael Kuehl.
And me, Roger Bell West.
We are back from our holidays, and we are going to be doing our ritual act for this time of year. We're going to be answering RPG a day in about RPG a minute, is our hope.
But I would like to thank several people who have kindly given us money while we were away. Robert Wolfe, Dave Morris, and Michael Hauser. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you. It has brought us back from the void. From the void.
Oh, we were probably coming anyway, let's be fair here.
All right, that's true. We continue to receive from the nice people at the Bundle of Holding advanced copies of their offers. And we mention them when we think there's something worth mentioning and recommending to you. And Roger has something he wishes to mention and recommend.
Well, yeah, it's 2300 AD, sort of.
It is the new, this is the latest version of 2300 AD. 2300 AD was originally Traveller 2300 AD.
But people got confused because they expected it to be Traveller just because it said Traveller on the box. I mean, what can you do?
I don't know, really, I don't. Some people do expect their game systems to stay the same or at least versions of the same forever.
Well, in this case it actually does. It's kind of ironic because when GGW developed it, it was after Twilight 2000. Their post-apocalypse game. And with Twilight 2000, they'd said, right, you know, we've done the Traveller thing. We think the system is kind of creaky now. They handed Digest Group Press the license to make more Traveller stuff for a while. They wanted a new system that they would ultimately develop into their house system. And Traveller 2300, as it first came out, was the first thing after Twilight 2000 to use a recognisably similar system. I mean, it wasn't directly compatible, yeah, but it was there. So it's kind of ironic that what this is actually an add-on book to Mongoose Traveller.
Which is, it is the latest version of, but it clearly owes its roots to right back to the little black books of original Traveller.
Yeah, and go and see previous episodes. We have talked about both Mongoose Traveller and indeed Mike ran a campaign of it, which we talked about. And I've talked previously about 2300 when the old stuff was on sale.
Yeah.
If you like the setting, and I must admit I do like the setting, and you don't particularly care one way or the other about the rules, which I don't. And, you know, I've played Mongoose Traveller before. I've been generally happy with it. If you are the sort of purist, which I might have been once upon a time, who feels that the exact details of how the mechanics works are desperately important, then this will not make you happy.
All right, so the attraction for you is the setting. Tell us about the setting.
Again, see the previous episode, which I'll put in the show notes, but it is basically... Well, it's 2300 AD. There was a great big war. Humanity has rebuilt itself from the ashes and has gone out colonizing stars. It's your classic. I think the thing they were trying to get at that's separate from Traveller is these are new planets. I mean, okay, so maybe you are not the first guy to step on one, but there is a map and you can find out planets that nobody has been to before that are just a little bit beyond where the frontier ends. There are, you know, sort of... One of the three big powers might have 20 worlds.
Yeah, you mentioned the three big powers. One of the things that distinguishes this from the earlier near history of the main Traveller universe is that there are still big powers. There are nation states which are going out and establishing their own areas of control, areas of special interest.
Yeah, I haven't worked the numbers, but I strongly suspect that if you worked out populations, you would find that the vast majority of humanity is still on Earth. Most games aren't, but that's where the weight is.
This is about the early days of humanity's expansion into the universe. There is at least one other alien species.
Oh, there are several.
Okay.
And there some of them are quite weird, which I like. I mean, All right, I've played Vargr before. I've enjoyed playing Vargr, but it is the Traveller Engines. They are basically sapient dogs, more or less.
Yeah.
Whereas
are they in this version?
No. This is not the Traveller universe. This is absolutely not the Traveller universe, which I think is the core reason why they actually changed the title in the end.
Yeah.
It is a completely separate timeline, which starts with the Twilight 2000 and Earth's Final War and then leads on to here. Notoriously, they did actually play a high-level war game of, so your power has just been nuked into ashes. How do you rebuild it? And then from the basis of which powers did well in that, they built the politics of this setting, which is a big part of why the French are dominant in a lot of it. Anyway, it does lots of things that aren't Traveller. It is vanishingly rare to own your own spaceship. If you are going out being an explorer, which is certainly a thing you can do, you are probably doing it for a corporation. There's a little bit of aliens influence, but that's not a big thing. It is largely an optimistic setting, but it's quite a crunchy one. I mean, in the original timeline, there was a great big war. Alien invasion, planets wrecked, guerrilla fighting, all that kind of thing. It does, in its original form, have a very, very military emphasis, and I can't say that's gone here, but it feels less strong from the reading I've done so far. One shortcoming, potentially.
Yeah.
Well, two shortcomings. One is you have two rule books if you're running this, because you have your Traveller rule book with the core of everything, and then you have your 2300 add-on rulebook.
Which has
the rules that are specific and changed for this setting. Like, for example, Classic Traveller doesn't really have much in the way of life extension except for stupidly expensive drugs. Whereas in this, a lot of people live a bit longer because standards of living are generally higher. It's a different era of science fiction.
when is it drawing from? 1980s, 1990s?
The books came out in the late 80s, early 90s, I think.
Yeah.
It wasn't exactly up-to-the-minute stuff. I mean, in the later part of the original run, they had the Earth Cybertech source book because, hey, all these games are doing cyberpunk. We should do cyberpunk too.
Yeah.
And that possibly didn't work terribly well. But it's much more, I mean, just as Traveller was based on mostly the more dated SF rather than the very latest stuff when it was being written in the 70s, 2300 is in a similar sort of idea. I mean, he hadn't actually written them at this point, but the David Weber and Steve White setting where you have jumps only from specific star to specific star. And then the alien invasion fleet comes along and they smash the planet flat, and heroic guerrilla fighters try to resist them, and then eventually the fleet comes back and smashes them out again. That kind of thing. That's the sort of thing that happens in this setting.
I tell you what it reminds me of a little is Purnell's near future, the Codominium stories. A little bit, slightly less depressing.
Anyway, the other slight downside to this specific offer, and I don't know whether this may exist elsewhere in the Mongoose 2300 line, because frankly I hadn't heard of it until this turned up.
Yeah.
But although you have a lot of adventure ideas and seeds, there is only one in what I saw actual developed adventure, which is the Bayan campaign. Which is essentially an exploratory mission to the Pleiades. That you may remember if you played original 2300. Yeah, there was a version. There was a supplement called Bayan, which was about the expedition to the Pleiades in the original lineup. However, that was 52 pages, and this is 322 with all the different bits. There is a lot more stuff. And sometimes Mongoose is good at doing original stuff, sometimes they're not, but they are very good at taking an original core concept and filling it out so that it actually becomes playable and you don't have to do all the work yourself. So that I actually find kind of tempting.
I can see that. And it's a sort of feel of games you've run in the past. At least with me, the Royal Navy in Space game had something of this feel of multiple Earth polities going out and finding stuff out there, and sometimes very weird stuff too.
Yeah, though also, you know, if you're in the back of Beyond, you are the only ship here. There is no help you can usefully call for. And that's also good for adventure-y stuff. You know, you've got to get yourself out of trouble because nobody else is going to. I'm surprised at how much I'm interested in this, and this is why I suggested we talk about it. However, I would just note that the bundle ends on the 2nd of September, so if you're not listening to this on release day, too bad, you missed it.
Well, in that case, just to please our patron, I will mention that there is also an offer running a little later for the Dungeon Crawl Classics version of Dying Earth, which isn't the Pelgrane Press version, but something more traditionally D&D. And if you wanted the Pelgrane Press version, I'd go for the Pelgrane Press version.
Which is long out of print, but I believe still relatively available. Yeah, my understanding is that they are saying this is a historically earlier era, so you still have the core of how magic works. You know, it rips itself out of your mind when you cast the spell, so you have to learn it again and so on. Uh-huh. But it is the high adventure days rather than the latter decadent days, which frankly I find more fun, but hey, such is life.
You heard it first here. Roger Bell West prefers decadence. Okay, so let us move on. So, it's September, will be when you hear this, and we are back from our summer holidays, and in a traditional move, attempting to get our brains going again, we're going to do, at speed, if we can, a run-through RPG A Day 2024. This is a list of questions, one a day, published during August, which people are supposed to blog about, write about, generally social media about, and this is our small late contribution. Normally our format is I propose a question to Roger and then he proposes the next one back to me, and then we lose our count some way through once we get into diversion. However,
just before we dive into it, I will say that I'm going to some of these actually say this year, but I'm going to try to talk about things that are in my recent gaming.
Okay.
Because otherwise, you know, the best game I ever had is probably the best game I ever had that I talked about last year or the year before. So,
well, I may well try repeat myself, but that's the privilege of old age.
Oh, absolutely.
So, first question to Roger. First RPG bought this year?
Well, I have a slightly less embarrassing answer than usual because I have actually bought an RPG product this year. Specifically, I have bought Architect of Worlds by John Ziegler.
Which is?
This is the guy who wrote the world generation system for GURPS Space.
Yeah.
And essentially it is the revised and updated version of that because, hey, we know a lot more about extrasolar planets now.
All right. Science!
So and in essence, it's, okay, so you want a star map. Here is where you start. It will start with, you know, how do you place your stars? How far apart are they realistically? Do you want a, you know, drunk tramline system, or do you want actual 3D space, etc.? What's a reasonable density? Wow. And then from there, when you start looking at your individual stars, you say, okay, how common do I want habitable planets to be? And therefore, what sort of stars should I place in order to make them more likely? And you can drill down to, okay, you know, the orbits are here, the ring systems are here, this planet has that many moons, this is what their periods are, that kind of thing. You can go into as much detail as you like, because it's not going to generate continent shapes for you.
Yeah.
But it's going to give you the core things you need to know about what this planet is like.
Okay. How easy would it be to take actual stellar data from actual stars near Earth and pump that into it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's using real-world measure. So when it says you have a star with these characteristics, those are the same characteristics you would look up in a star catalogue.
Okay.
So if you want to build out planetary systems round real space, that's absolutely no problem.
Well, I too have to say I can't figure out from my records what the first full RPG I bought this year was. But the first RPG related item I bought was the Dungeon Fantasy powered by GURPS GM screen, which has seen a fair bit of use this year.
Well, we'll make it back to that. So the most recently played.
Well, that would be the Dungeon Fantasy powered by GURPS RPG. This has been my regular gaming session for a Wednesday for a while now. And I've been enjoying it. I'm starting to chafe at the limitations of it. That it's about the same sort of dungeon crawling encounter every week. And the role-playing still goes on because my players are my players and they will they will ham it up and chew the scenery at any opportunity. But the subtler stuff, the personal interactions stuff, the moral issues stuff generally isn't there. You're down the dungeon, there are horrible things down there, you're going to kill them and take their stuff.
Okay, I'm going to have our first complete diversion here, or possibly even digression. Recently talking on the SJ Games forums, and somebody suggested from my responses to his list of possible campaigns that I tended to prefer realistic settings. And yes, I think I like complex characters. Mm. And complex characters are much easier to play if they're in a complex world.
True.
And a complex world is going to feel realistic even if it isn't, even if it has magic and so on, because it's complex. You know, it has unexpected consequences. You have magical fire, but you put all the street sweepers out of business, that kind of thing. So I've done Dungeon Fantasy. I've done specifically the GURPS Dungeon Fantasy, but it feels restraining anyway. My actual answer here is They Came From Beneath the Sea.
Oh, yes.
Which is a game of B-movie horror. In some cases explicitly. There are optional rules for things like calling in your stunt double. When you think a situation is just a bit too dangerous.
Yeah.
Very much in the tradition of a game that nobody except me seems to remember called It Came From the Late, Late, Late Show.
I remember it, but I don't think I ever played it.
Anyway, it's bizarrely you using the old World of Darkness system, so a bucket of D10s.
Okay,
this has been breaking our brains a little bit, but I wrote up a probability table, and that's helped a lot.
So this wasn't just a one-off. You're doing a bit.
This is with Watson Hall. I think we're approaching the final session at the moment, but you never know. In any case, you can hear what's there so far on tekelly.me/Watson Hall, which I'll probably link from somewhere. Most often played RPG?
Well, I've answered this question before, and both recently and career-wise, the answer still has to be GURPS.
Yeah,
I would like it to be there to be more RuneQuest in it, which is my second favourite system, and I'm working on that. But lifetime and over all sorts of settings, GURPS has been the most useful tool to me.
Yeah. I haven't really tried to count hours or even years or anything like that, because there were quite a few years when Rollmaster was my primary system. But certainly of late, 3 or 4 sessions a month typically of GURPS in a couple of different long-running campaigns.
Hmm. What's next? Okay. RPG with great art.
I'm still not really an art guy.
Uh-huh.
I accept that you need something to break up the page, but honestly, if you put in a box with an X across it, that would probably do it as well for me most of the time. I am a sucker for pretty components in board games. You've seen some of the board games I favour. If it's shiny, I'm probably into it. But my experience in play is pretty bare bones. When I'm reading about the game, when I'm getting ideas about what I'm going to do, and art that shows you, okay, this is what a dragon looks like in this particular world. You know, this is what a market looks like in this setting, that kind of thing I quite like. But in play, it's just me and some black and white printed sheets, and that's just what I got used to.
Well, I will pour a good deal of praise onto RuneQuest Glorantha, or RuneQuest Adventures in Glorantha, as I believe it's officially called. Archaosium has been doing a wonderful job of supplying evocative art for the mythological background of its setting in Glorantha, and also normally practical, there are bad exceptions, art to show you where you are and what you're doing and what the place looks like. And I think it makes the whole game a good deal more playable. They could do better. As I say, there are some adventures where I have looked at the map, looked at the picture and thought, what the hell are they trying to tell me here? But by and large, it's evocative. I also mentioned the new edition of Greg Stolze's Reign and Unknown Armies as doing good but very depressing and weird art.
RPG with great writing.
I will mention. Let me see now. I had a list somewhere. Anything by Greg Stolze?
You can't hear me grinding my teeth. You really can't.
Would you grind them more loudly if I mentioned Ken Haidt and Jonathan Tweet?
I don't think I've read anything by Tweet. I like Ken Haidt's writing when he's talking about background. He doesn't do mechanics very well, but I think, to be fair, he would probably not argue with that. He's much more interested in the background, and most of the time so am I.
Yeah. Phil Masters has a very dry British style, which I should push forward because he's a friend of the podcast.
But also, this is what normal writing is to me, so I don't notice it, but by goodness, it gets the job done. I will declare a slight bias. I like Sean Punch's writing, GURPS line editor. The bias is that we work for the same company, so. But he gets the point that rules writing is technical writing, and it absolutely has to be clear.
Yeah.
There
are lots of examples in the other direction we could mention, but let us be kind.
Yeah. RPG that is easy to use.
Rhesus, I'm going to say, and also Quest Worlds. They are systems that I can carry in my head normally, though I have problems sometimes with Westworld's desire to simulate stories rather than situations. But Rhesus is so easy and so. And I don't resent the story emphasis, the emphasis on cliche and strong, boldly defined characters, because Rhesus is so short a work, he doesn't lecture at me.
Yeah, I've quite enjoyed Quag's quick adventure game system, which is on a similarly lightweight style. I do think that in order to be an RPG as opposed to a collaborative storytelling exercise, there is a certain minimum complexity, whether that's actually in the rules or you just have to make it up at the table because the rules don't say anything. Yes, I have suffered from Blades in the Dark Sea previous episode. But, for example, Powered by the Apocalypse has very simple rules. you know, you have these five things you can do, and you roll two dice and you see what the result is. But the GM and players have to do a lot of work translating from, yeah, I'll go over there and hit him, to, okay, which of your four moves is it that you are doing here?
Mm.
I will just say, I don't think you should have to learn much to start playing as distinct from GMing, but we'll return.
Yeah, the rules are the GM's problem, or at least one of them. I have no RPG with good form. I have no idea what this means. Maybe Roger can enlighten me.
Well, my answer to this is that a system that more or less matches the way I think about running games, a system that has an answer when I have a question but doesn't intrude when I don't ask it for an answer, which, of course, is GURPS for me.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it would be for anybody else. I mean, you would probably feel a similar way about RuneQuest, I suspect, simply because you spent so much time with those mechanics, yeah, and with that setting.
I'm not sure that the current set of rules has that good form.
Mm.
I was nice about the art earlier, and I'm not going to be nice about the rules for RuneQuest, Glorantha.
We did trip over some. This yeah. really needed another editing pass issues, even in our first session, but that's for a future episode. I will just mention, in terms of good form, Steve Jackson Games is one of the few gaming companies that was around in the 80s and is still around in the same sense. You know, it hasn't gone bust or been bought out, yeah, or both of the above. In some cases, it's some of the same people. Which obviously can't last forever, but there is that continuity of, yeah, we are not just trying to cash in on what's on somebody else's work. We are the people who do the work still, which I like.
Do you think, on a side note, do you think there will be a fifth edition? Do you think there's a call for it? A need for it, even?
That's a long and complicated answer to what seems like quite a simple question. I don't think there will be a 4th Ed compendium, because they specifically designed it not to need one.
Yeah.
4th Ed does what I want. On the other hand, I strongly suspect that very few people are actually buying it now.
True that.
And of course, we don't know details of the accounts and how profitable it may be or not. From year to year... I mean, there are certainly things one could do with a 5th Ed. There are some obvious streamlinings of things that have been added since 4th Ed originally came out. Things like cost factors, and you could probably extend that into modifiers. Basically, there are things to make the whole thing a bit less adding up a column of numbers and a bit more, okay, now I can play my character.
Yeah.
I've occasionally chatted about this on the SJ Games forums. It sounds as if I spent a lot of time there, which I mostly don't. But, for example, in Skill of the Week, Disadvantage of the Week, Threads, I've often said, right, well, if someone were daft enough to let me design a GURPS 5th edition, all of these skills would be rolled into that skill with a specialisation. It doesn't need five separate entries in the great big list of skills, which is too big, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There are some simplifications I'd do. Whether those are simplifications it would make commercial sense to do, I cannot judge. I mean, am I a typical GURPS player? My goodness, I have no idea.
I'm not sure there is such a thing. All I know is about the GURPS players who play with me.
Anyway, an accessory that you appreciate.
Okay, well, I'm going to give a fairly old-fashioned answer. I'm grateful for battle mats. I can draw on with erasable pens, for dice stars and dice boxes, those clipped together neoprene dice trays. And I was very impressed recently by my friend Martin, who has acquired a screen, a computer screen he can lay down flat on his game table and put the maps for the Dungeon Fantasy game on.
Nice.
He's still working on mastering the software, though. I'm also grateful or the Traveller Universe map website.
Yes. Yes, that's fair enough. I should have put that in later, probably. The one I'm going to name here is All Rolled Up, which,
yes,
if you have been to a gaming convention in the UK, you'll probably have seen their stands. It's basically a tool roll, lightly optimized for role playing stuff. So one end of it is a small bag for dice. Then you have some large pockets for index cards and similar, and some smaller pockets for pens and pencils and things.
Yeah, I have one on the desk in front of me even now.
All right, most of the gaming I do is over voice over IP these days, but on the rare occasions when I go and do it in person, it's jolly handy.
9, an accessory you'd like to see.
Well, it sounds as if it may exist. Well, if I'm fantasizing, a very cheap A4 tablet that runs Lineage OS or Linux, so that I can run it without giving all my data to somebody else. And yes, one of the forms would be to put it in the middle of the table, but I'm also somewhat envious of your iPad, which obviously doesn't satisfy several of these constraints, like being very cheap. But I can't remember the model, but it is A4 or close to it?
It is A4-ish, yes.
So this is obviously handy if you are reading books that were designed for A4 layout in PDF. So
I would like a computer simulation of the streets and buildings of Parvis, or indeed any fantasy city that somebody wants to publish. So you can show people, here, if you stand here, this looks like this. That's where you are in relation to the other. This is where the crowd is gathering. I would also add to that, I think that people who design science fiction spaceships ought to provide such a faculty for their creations. There exists, I've seen it on the intertubes, a 3D printed model to a miniatures scale of a traveller scout ship, and it's a beautiful looking thing. And I would never get that much use out of it, and I would find a computer display of it just so much more useful.
You may recall the Travellers comic strip in White Dwarf back in the day.
Vaguely, a long time ago.
The guy who drew that, Mark Harrison, had a information packet that you could send off for, and it was basically the full plans of in essence, the ship that he'd used in his own Traveller game, but with all sorts of details that were missing, like, here is exactly how long it takes an RS hatch to open after you press the button. And perhaps more importantly, to close. If you have stuck your leg through it, or indeed the guy boarding your ship has stuck his leg through it, what will happen? That kind of thing.
Press twice for amputation.
Anyway, an RPG you would like to see on television?
I think elements of Bainstorm would work on TV. I would also like to see a home box office or something like it, an Ars Magica series.
Mm-hmm.
It has... The trouble is, if it would get twisted out of shape, but Ars Magica as a setting is adaptable enough that you could find some way to put the fevered imaginings of the scriptwriters into it. Mm. I don't know. Exalted could work as the anime it's drawn from, but that's probably a bit too specialised.
Well, my feeling was that RPGs basically already steal from the cultural zeitgeist anyway.
Yeah.
And are stolen from in turn. This is why I was quite surprised to see some I think it's Modiphius is bringing out a Space 1999 RPG.
Oh, dear God, why?
Officially licensed and everything, using their TD20 system.
Why? Why? Oh, the horror. Well, please.
Yes, but, I mean, even as someone who quite enjoyed the show, I feel that anything that was worth stealing from the show to use in an RPG has already been stolen by everything since it came out in the 70s. So, you know, anyway. With that in mind, I don't want... I would rather I'm not interested in somebody saying, well, you know, this is the Dungeons & Dragons show, and then it's generic fantasy, even if that's reasonably accurate to Dungeons & Dragons. I would much rather be take a setting with a bit more flavour, and the one I was thinking of was Transhuman Space, which is now sufficiently divergent from the real world, inevitably because it was a near-future game when it was being written, that it could be quaintly interesting and also kind of fun. Also, the special effects would be up to it these days.
I think if you're going to do retro, what was science fiction once? I think they probably want it to be a couple of centuries further back than that one, or a century or so further back.
You're saying generic drawn by swans here.
I was thinking more steam powered to the stars myself, but
yeah,
it might work.
Leiji Matsumoto would love it. Japanese manga artist who has this obsession with space trains. Long story.
Do not lean out of the caboose whilst in space. Games with RPG with well-supported one-shots.
Two things occur to me. Neither of which I've actually played very much, but they're very much in the style of, no, we're not going to run a whole campaign. We're going to run a really weird setting that has maybe one or two adventures in it and then go on to something else because it's all lightweight. Troika.
Okay.
It's derived originally from Fighting Fantasy sets, mechanics, but you know they're pretty simple mechanics. It's not about whether you can stand up at a fight. It's about... this thing is ridiculously powerful. You've got to talk your way around it. I like that.
I admire the initiative system in that. It had a nice feel to it. But the definition of the characters is just too weird. And and even for me, the definition of the characters is just too weird. It's highly flexible, but not in a way that creates characters I think I could play.
Mm. The other one I'd like to mention is Mothership, which is getting a lot of fuss at the moment because the Kickstarter recently delivered. And similarly, they're bringing out a whole lot of little supplements for here is this particular gritty working stiffs in space setting and how it's going to kill you.
I am going to have to dispose of my Kickstarted luxury version of Mothership because when I actually read it, I found that I had lost all enthusiasm.
Oh, fair enough. Send in your bids.
Okay, I was going to say, well-supported one-shots, I would mention Unknown Armies, and I would also mention the early editions of Over the Edge, which had some wonderful, weird, and capable of some wonderful weird stuff. All right, leave it at that.
Well-supported campaigns.
Yeah, well, there are a few. Call of Cthulhu, obviously, is famous for it. I would like to mention the Dracula, the great campaign for Knights Black Agents, Dracula, the Dracula Dossier, which I had immense fun with. And I would even be willing to try to run again if anybody got some enthusiasm up about it, because it's very adaptable to a different set of players, a different set of circumstances, and even to a different set of historical circumstances. Though I'm not sure actually I'd care to run a game in which you're chasing Dracula across Europe in Europe just at the moment.
Yeah, I was also going to mention Call of Cthulhu. Some of the more recent stuff isn't getting such great reviews, but the classic campaigns and... I mean, you look at Masks of Nyarlathotep and even the new shiny edition that they brought out a few years ago, there's still a fair old bit of work for the GM to do to make it coherent. But it's a load of work that can be done, it has been done, and was done jolly well for me and others, so...
Running even a pre-published big campaign is work. Is going to require you
If it's a mongoose one where they've laid out everything for you, you still have to find it in the several hundred pages.
Yeah, and no campaign is without the point at which the players break it. I think our experience. All right, evocative environments.
Well, I'm possibly boring, but I still like transhuman space. It's that space is not a routine. It's where you go for a routine job, but it is never quite routine because it is still dangerous because it's space. That's a feeling I like, and I think something like Star Wars doesn't get it. It's just, we're in space, gosh, wow.
Yeah, whereas Star Trek is, we're in space, and Captain, here are the reports you have to read. Glorantha, I would mention Glorantha, the dragon sleeping beneath the landscape, the skyscraping mountains, the bleak desert at the core of the northern continent, and lots of other, and even weirder places. Tekumel, the cities with the tinkling bells, the sounding gongs, sweltering heat, and the scent of human sacrifice rising from the temples. Terribly respectable temples, but still human sacrifice. I'm currently reading The Guide to Monte Cook's City Ptolus. I don't much like either of the systems it's written for, but maybe I can... But it is a huge block of hundreds of characters and hundreds of situations and buildings, and it is... I haven't yet got a handle on how you run a campaign with it, but I'm having enormous fun reading it up. Maybe I can resist my tendency to twitch at the cipher system long enough to use it, but I'm not promising that.
Or you just slap it with a handful of GURPS putty and smooth off the surface.
Have you seen how much stuff there is there? The GURPS versions of the cipher characters would be enormously complex to build, whereas the cipher system waves its hands a lot.
Compelling characters.
Well, the characters who stick in my mind are the long-running player characters. The Treadroy Practicals, especially Bjorn Brokenbow. Sir Alison de Lacy and her friends. Those are both from my long-running GURPS Banestorm games. I run with my Wednesday night and Monday night groups, respectively. And apart from the fact that they are the game-playing avatars of my friends, and they reflect my friends and their own characters very well, it's just the length of time and the depth of familiarity I get with those player characters.
Yeah, I suspect this is why, although I haven't played him recently, this is why I'm going to talk about Rabbit's Foot again. Michael Chumley.
Tell me about it.
Went through Masks of Nyarlathotep and came out more or less as much of a man as he was when he went in.
As sane as he ever was?
Well, yes, I mean, he was to some extent an experiment because... When we started that campaign, when we were thinking about the characters, it occurred to me that it's something that doesn't get mentioned very much, possibly because of the usual American bias, but any British male character who is of an age to be an adventurer in the 20s or 30s went through the war.
Yes.
Or didn't go through the war, and that in itself has changed their life because everybody else went through the war. And so I wanted to have somebody for whom that was as significant as it does seem to have been to a lot of the people who were involved. And they didn't talk about it, because British. But it changed people's lives.
Yes, you're right. You don't get that degree of total involvement in the war years until the Second World War for the Yanks.
Yeah, and a lot more people wrote about the Second World War. I think the general feeling after the first lot was, all right, it's done. Let's just forget about it.
We'll never have to do that again.
But, so he actually had a fairly good war, all things considered. But, you know, Eton and the guards. And then, you know, then Third Wipers happened, and yeah.
Yeah.
And by the time he'd come out of that, he had come from a, okay, not entirely stupid, but you know, not a tower of intellect and not a particularly thoughtful sort of chap, to someone who thought, right, I have these resources and damn it, I'm going to use them to make sure that something like that doesn't happen again. And I'm going to... then he got, because of all the spiritualism that was happening after the war, started drifting into those circles and thinking, right, there are people here who are going to make the entire... Yeah, you know, the entire south of England into the battlefield of Third Wipers, and I am not going to let that happen.
Hmm.
So, yeah, that was, I mean, to some extent that came out in the game, to some extent it didn't, but the point is that was where I went in from.
Yeah.
That was who he was when he got started. And, yeah, whether it's an enjoyable series or deep personality, I like compelling characters anyway. I will try to play them even if it's a Dungeon Bash game.
All right. Great character gear.
If I'm going to be glib, I'm going to say I'm not here for the toys. I'm here for the people who use the toys.
Yeah, I feel I don't have a great deal of focus on this sort of thing. Partly because I hate shopping scenes. And partly because, whilst I can look at a starship and say that's an opportunity for storytelling and a place and a thing they can protect and love, I can't look at a sword in the same way. And the other factor is I don't think I'm very good at designing this stuff, and I'm not very good at thinking about what the malevolent effects of something I've invented are going to be later on if I let the players keep it.
Now that I think about it, I had one character in a cyberpunk game who had a very extensive equipment list, most of which, to be fair, was cyberware.
That
was a lot of how you tweaked what your character could do in that game. So I'm still quite proud of the quick change hand mount. stick your hand over your shoulder, and the backpack rotates the right hand.
Into the... I'll be all right in a moment. Okay. Oh.
A game that's quick to learn.
Let me see now. I'm going to have to come back to Rhesus. I think. And the lighter games like Quest Worlds are fairly easy to pick up. Slightly more complex, I would say. Feng Shui is quite easy to pick up, mostly because there isn't a lot to it, other than the simulation of Hong Kong cinema fights. At the top of the list, Rhesus. I can explain that in 5 minutes, and a newbie player will be able to. We'll have a few questions, and then be there.
That's fair. I was stepping back a bit from specific games and thinking that I think it ought to be possible to learn what you need to play in 5 minutes. Not necessarily to generate a character, and certainly not to run a game or set up a campaign. Mm. But I can do that with GURPS. I have done so when I'm running it at conventions. You have never played GURPS before. Here is your character. Those numbers are your general stats. These numbers are your skills. You'll be rolling 3d6 against them. This is roughly what advantages and disadvantages are, and they're mostly self-descriptive.
Hmm.
So the reason I mention this, I mean, I think of this as a thing any game ought to be able to do, but for something like D&D or Pathfinder, you need to know quite a lot of the system in order to make decisions about what you're going to do. I find it doesn't quite map as well to real-world things. I mean, if I say, well, I'm going to attack, but I want to be a bit cautious about it, I'm more interested in not getting hit than in landing a blow if it comes to the trade-off between them. GURPS has a thing for that. It's called defensive attack. I don't know what that is in D&D. I would trust that a good dungeon master would be able to do the equivalent thing. But anyway.
Well, that I will agree with you with the proviso that some of the subsystems, the optional systems in GURPS do require a fair bit of any sort of magic, requires a fair bit of knowledge of the system and the subsystem.
Yeah, and once you get into character generation or even character development, that gets complicated in turn.
Yeah, I will say that RuneQuest, though I love it, is not going to be that teachable that quickly. 10-15 minutes, I would say, before you let them out with the dice and the character sheet.
Well, skills you can do pretty quickly, but when it comes to strike ranks and magic, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, where were we? An engaging RPG community.
People everywhere are terrible. People everywhere are wonderful.
Be more specific.
Well, I'm the only game that I'm sufficiently into that I go to the publisher's own forum, and it's one of the few publishers that still has their own forum, which also makes these easier, is GURPS and SJ Games. Otherwise, I chat a bit on Discussion to Kelly Lee, which is probably where you got this episode from if you didn't use the RSS feed. There are huge sites. I know people who do EN World. I know people who do RPGNet. Somehow this doesn't quite appeal in the way... It's probably fine for people who aren't me. I would much rather have a smaller community where I know the five people I'm talking to than yell into the void and get the four other people across the world who know this particular thing. I don't know.
I've withdrawn from RPGNet over the recent months. The Glorantham community produces a great wave of fan-produced supplements of very high quality, all the way from settings to campaigns. I would agree with you about GURPS, the GURPS forums, which are very useful and very creative.
I would just put a slight caveat on there of when people start discussing exactly how you would build this example of a either real world or fictional thing in GURPS, whether that's a personal ability or a spaceship or whatever, just ignore those threads. They do not go anywhere useful.
I'd also mention...
They're great fun, but they don't go anywhere useful if you're not already into that. Sorry, I should specify.
They do get down into the rabbit holes fairly quickly. I'd also mention Ars Magica on the Atlas Games forums, which is, you're going to get into a lot of historical rabbit holes, but if you're interested in history, then that's... something that the...
Is it great fun, or is it not what I need to know because the players are arriving in 5 minutes?
Quite. I think that's there for long-term research.
Memorable moment of play.
All right. I have the time in Drax Vampire game when my bloodsucker, as of the climax to the campaign, got to meet Kane, who apparently is driving a black cab in London nowadays.
All the best people are.
Oh, well. The time in our Caribbean... not Cabal. What's it called? The Caribbean voodoo game in GURPS, in which our group of ritual magicians from the islands visiting London got to exorcise the lich, formerly known as Professor Moriarty. And the climax of my Dracula dossier game, in which one player got to use the demolition skill he hadn't found the chance to use at all during the entire run, and used it to blow up Dracula's last refuge just before he respawned.
I have a character moment that I'll revisit, but from the recent stage one of the Warhammer Fantasy campaign I was running, the parties in the sewers, The players are well aware that the things I'm hinting at are inflammable gas, but the characters don't know that. So the characters go gaily on, and then then it suddenly gets very loud, and somebody fireballed us. But Rabbit's Foot being very Rabbit's Foot, while confronting Nyarlathotep in person, starts reciting Newbolt. Play up and play the game.
That must have amused the howling void of many faces.
But also, a little bit later, we have gone under the pyramids with a certain amount of King's Rifles fire support, and things are going a bit wibbly, and they are clearly feeling edgy and on the verge of breaking, and Rabbit's Foot reaches down from my brain into my throat and shouts, "Dress that line!" Yes, Captain Chumley of the Guards is still there.
All right. Sensational session. This is splitting hairs a bit in this set of questions.
Yeah, I mean, I continue to... If I don't regularly enjoy the sessions, I probably don't stick around with the game. Not this happens very often these days. But there aren't that many super high points, and they tend to be those memorable moments.
Yeah, I would like to mention I try to do every year a Christmas time gathering. We call it the Winterval session nowadays, for my Wednesday night group to gather together over the dead time of the holidays and have an all day session. These are one offs, and some of them have been memorable. The first one was the Discworld adventure, which I think is still on Steve Jackson's site, about a newly qualified class from the Ankh-Morpork Pork Watch Academy on patrol on Hogwatch night. There was Christmas Day in the Warehouse, which featured a group of grunts who had found themselves trapped in a World War II Italian city, which was itself trapped within a magical bottle inside Warehouse 23. And last Christmas, there was a ghost story in the Hooniverse featuring Rudyard Kipling and his two school roommates stranded in a deserted hotel with a young Professor Moriarty.
Hey, presumably not yet a lich.
Not yet. Well, this is a different timeline. Okay, ask me the next question and I shall give you an answer.
Amazing adventure.
I haven't got anything for this. Oh, dear. Hang on. Let me reach into my... I haven't got anything for this. I don't know what it means, as distinct from... a specific session. What is an adventure? Amazing adventure.
Well, I will point to one. I have to disclaim the author is a friend, but I have played through and really enjoyed The Perishing of Sir Ashby Phipps, which is a mid-Victorian adventure. It's 1860s or 70s, I think. In moderately remote Lincolnshire, the local squire has died in slightly odd circumstances, and his widow employs a group of paranormal investigators to work out what happened, she being slightly spiritually inclined herself. Mm. And, all right, it was the author of the adventure running it, which obviously helps in terms of integration. But... Yeah. We just had a great deal of fun with that. There are definite clues to find. There are lots of lovely red herrings. It's very much an investigative game. I mean, do not bother to bring your shotgun on this. It's not explicitly Lovecraftian, though it could fit into that setting. Anything with a bit of general supernaturalism would work. You could do it with M.R. James kind of setting as well. It's just great fun and also available to purchase.
All right, I will blow my own trumpet then, as the author of I ran a dread game built around M.R. James about the election of a new warden for a peculiar Cambridge college, which led up to the one time I ran it, led up to its intended climax, which was one of the players, which was Roger, sacrificing himself to solve the problem and end the cycle of terror and horror, which had been plaguing the college, unknown by anybody much, for centuries.
He had the right feeling of inevitability and the right thing to do, which, yeah, all praise.
Okay, that was me failing to answer, so I must be pitching something to Roger. Next, classic campaign.
Okay, I've had a great time with Mask of Nyarlathotep, and you can listen to it all on Warts and All. I'm also quite enjoying The Enemy Within, though there's a lot of it to get my head around. And we have done part one of five, and we will probably go on at some point, but my goodness, there's a lot of preparation needed.
Well, being an egotist, if it's meant to be a classic published campaign, then I'm going to say the Dracula dossier.
If it's not, then it's my World War II game, obviously. But
yeah, well, if it's not, I've got a list of stuff I've done. Anyway, Dracula dossier is my favourite of the things I've bought and run. The things I've written myself, the Dawn of Magic game, which was about the agents of King Charles II exploring the new world of magic brought about by certain unwise experiments of Sir Isaac Newton. Oh, Isaac Newton, he wasn't a sir. He never became one in that universe. And the Seven Voyages of Sir Alexander de Lacy, which saw the good Lady Knight and her companions on a multiversal quest. I have a slight tendency to do multiversal quests. Ending up at the winter court of the demon emperor of Megalos, where she and her friends killed him. Okay.
So notable non-player character.
Oh, well, I would mention, leading on from the last, his son, the good emperor of Megalos, who is trying to, at least in my universe, reform the evil empire. His corps of magistrates, especially a Morgan Ackerman, magistrate for the Northern Circuit, who employed the player characters. And also from my version of Banestorm, Scarlet the Dragon, who lived in caves up in the mountains, had a fancying for human women, and acted as a patron for Sir Alisande in her early years.
Gosh, I really can't think of any recent examples for me. Dear me. I need to stop doing more gymming, clearly.
Well, yeah. Peerless players.
Well, yes, my blushes, sir, and yours too.
Yes, actually, I was first of all struck by Roger's talents when he was playing a Russian in, I think, some form of Stargate game. And was very, very focused on being the Russian and reliable. And yeah, it was great fun.
I will say I like nearly all the people I play with regularly, or I wouldn't be playing with them regularly. As a GM, I utterly value any player who is willing to get involved in the setting and you know, not just do the obvious thing, but actually say, okay, this is a setting where I could do this. Dear GM, if I set about doing this, you know, what will happen? And that sort of thing.
I really appreciate players who say, well, logically, if the setting is like that, there must be some of this in it, mustn't there? Some of those suggestions are more helpfully intended than others, but nonetheless, people, I like players who get into the character. Sometimes I have difficulty telling whether they're being obnoxious and obstructive as the characters or as the players. But about all of them, all of my players are peerless. Or none of them are, I'm not sure. All of them have their uses.
Right. Acclaimed advice.
Here is my GMing advice. A trip to the loo is more than enough time to figure out what to do next.
Well, that was what I was going to say.
Never plan too much and let them get into trouble, but do that in a way that they can't blame you for it.
The GM is a player too. The GM deserves to have fun too.
That's good. Desirable dice.
Well, yeah, the
we should post a picture of your dice box.
I have opened it live on air before now. The dice I actually use most at the moment is a set of double D6, i.e. they're dodecahedral with numbers 1 to 6 twice.
Hmm. Why do you prefer them to the cubes?
Because they roll better.
They would, yeah.
I am generally these days rolling in a dice tray when I'm at a role-playing session because I'm in a cramped space in front of a monitor. So it's good to get something that will roll well. And it doesn't need to stop quickly because it will hit the edge of the tray.
Yeah, I will write out 1,000 times. I have no desire for any more dice. But I will mention the star-spangled dice that John Dolman, 3D6, that John Dolman got us for the Space GURPS game that you were... The GURPS Space game that you were running for us, which I keep in a box on my desk.
Superb screen.
Well, I will mention again RuneQuest Glorantha. The GM screen for RuneQuest Glorantha is not any more useful than any others, nor any less on the GM side. But on the player's side, it shows the God's Wall, which is an artifact in the game, which is just full of... full of the deep history of the game. It's a wall somewhere in the sun-worshipping country where in the god time, one of the gods pressed the seal of the sun god against it and rolled out a picture of all the gods who paid homage to the... to the god of the sun. And it shows the god of the sun, his court, his aspects, and more than 100 deities, some of whom had not yet been born at the moment when the image was made. But that's the nature of time in Glorantha.
Time is hard, let's not bother with it.
Time is hard, let's play games with it.
I confess, I see that, and as a Glorantha novice, my immediate reaction is, here is this thing that is clearly meant to signify something, and it doesn't. But, yeah, that's me. I've never been a big fan of GM screens. I generally, most of my gaming has been either in front of a computer anyway, or sitting around a table. But I do like the GURPS one just as a handy reference booklet. It's on reasonably thick cards. I can grab it up from wherever it is and let it flop open. And it has most of the tables I actually want to look at, which, okay, mostly that's the speed range table and the long range table.
And the fumble tables and the critical tables.
Those are rarer. But yeah, when somebody fumbles, that's the thing I reach for rather than grabbing them out of the book.
Marvelous miniature.
Don't do miniatures, sorry.
Well, I got two to mention. I've got the small gold miniature of me as the GM. They reduced my belly quite considerably, which my players got me as a gift and a compliment. And I will also mention my set of Nog in the Nog miniatures, which I must find a use for one of these days.
Great gamer gadget.
Well, I'm not really a gadget person. I don't think I have any gadgets more complicated than a dice tower. I have my iPad, which is very useful. It has PDFs of any game that I happen to be currently running, plus a lot more on it. But that's about as complicated as I get. A gadgetry is ce n'est pas moi.
Possibly because I'm quite techie in the rest of my life. I tend to go fairly low tech during games. I do have a dice tower, a crystal twister, but I hardly ever actually use it. It looks and sounds gorgeous, but you know, not really my thing.
Neither. Awesome app.
Okay, this is where I should have said Traveller Map. But yeah. We agree Traveller Map is good. And all the data are available, so you can write your own extensions as well. It's great.
I think the most useful app I have is the GURPS character generator. I'd like to mention, in an elegiac sort of way, the Meta Create Ars Magica app, which isn't being supported anymore. Really, Ars Magica needs something. You could, if you were willing to teach yourself, you could probably do a lot with Microsoft databases and spreadsheets. But I'm not in the mood to do that much work. Be honest.
Person you would like to game with?
Ken Height and or Robin Laws. To be GM'd by them, not to be their GM.
Hey.
Maybe Greg Stolze, but I hope he's not offended at this, but he may be a little loud for me.
I've been in a game run by Mike Pondsmith many years ago. He is definitely a little loud for me.
Right. Let's see. Getting to an end.
I don't have any specific person I'd like to game with, other than, in a more general sense, somebody who really gets Fate and can cause me to get it properly. Is it really just you have a thing you get plus two, or is there more to it than that? I think being in a game where this is happening would make sense, but there may be an actual play out there which would make sense of it.
I think it's the creation of the aspects thing that isn't something I automatically call for, and doesn't automatically make sense to me.
Mm.
All right. Game or gamer you miss?
Well, I would like to mention two specific people here. One, Karen Gillam, who was of the Cambridge Gamers, who died a few years ago. And the other, Fred Bracken, whom I never actually met in person, but he was a GURPS head of very, very long standing. One of the names I was always really happy to see on the who has applied to do this latest playtest list.
Yeah.
Because he would absolutely dig in and... he would not put up with, well, it more or less works. He would say, no, this is actually going to break stuff. And if I can spot that there is a problem here, other people are going to spot it too. You just can't leave it. And, okay, so it's more work for the authors than for the playtest coordinator. But, a good guy. I miss him too.
I miss my friend Rob, who died earlier this year. I miss Greg Stafford, too. All the games that I want are still available to me. So are several others I could happily see the backside of. But nowadays, everything is preserved, whether it deserves it or not. That's it.
Hmm.
Do you have an amazing anecdote?
Gaming's great. You should try it sometime. Oh, hang on. You probably already do.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna tell the sunshine story again, because though I've probably told it before. This was when I was running a LARP. We haven't mentioned LARPs. LARPs should get more mention. I was running a Galranthan LARP at one of the Leicester cons. I was one of the GMs. And there came a point at which a player character said, look, I want to go to the altar and pray to God to show me a sign that my cause is just. So I took her and the attending witnesses outside into the courtyard and posed her, and then said, "And at the moment that you speak the prayer, the sun comes out from behind the clouds, and a pure beam of sunlight shines down upon you, giving you the blessings of the invisible God." And as I said it, the clouds parted, and a pure beam of sunlight shone down upon the party. Yeah. And I tried to look as if I had meant to do that. I hope I wasn't too smug. Oh, I hope I was just the right amount of smug.
So that is RPG a minute or slightly more for another year.
Oh, well, we got through. If you'd like to tell us your answers to any of these questions, or point us to the websites where you have answered them already, that's what normal people do, then you can contact us via...
Leave a message on the website or email podcast@tekeli.ly.
And hopefully, by next month, we'll be well into the autumn, which is my favourite time of the year, when it's not too blazing hot and it's not too freezing cold. Take care of yourselves.